And good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining the Interoperability Standards Workgroup. I'm Mike Berry with ONC, and we are always glad that you can join us. As a reminder, your feedback is welcomed, which can be typed in the chat feature throughout the meeting, or can be made verbally during the public comment period that is scheduled at about 11:55 Eastern Time this morning. I'm going to begin roll call with our work group members. So when I call your name, please let us know if you are here. And I'll start with our co-chairs, Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Arian Malik. Kelly Aldrich.
Hi, everyone.
Hans Bootendeck.
Good morning.
Thomas Cantalina or Jeff Ford. Christina Caraballo.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Steve Eichner.
Good morning.
Sanjeev Tandon.
Good morning.
Raj Govarti. Jim Jurgis. Ben Kaloto. Leslie Leonard. Hung Lu.
Good morning.
David McCauley.
Good morning.
Tom McDonald. Aaron Meary. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber.
Morning.
Abby Sears.
Good morning.
And Ram Sharam.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. Now, please join me in welcoming Stephen for his opening remarks.
Thank you. And Arian's in the process of getting online.
I'm here.
He's here now. Terrific. Perfect timing. That's great. Well, thank you all, as usual, for your time and attention this morning. We really appreciate everybody logging on, and we're sure we're going to get some more coming on as we go. We are deep in our final run here to finish off our Charge 1 work, looking both at the draft USCDI V3 as well as other Level 2 data elements that were not included, and trying to put together formal recommendations back to the HITAC. We are hoping to get our work done in the next few weeks in terms of collecting input and going through as much of it as we can. We have had such wonderful engagement with putting recommendations onto the spreadsheet that I truly don't think we're going to get through all of them. So the co-chairs and the ONC leads are working together to try to prioritize the suggestions that have been submitted, and we will go through as many of those as possible. If there are those of you who have put items in the spreadsheet that you feel particularly enthusiastic about and want to assure that we get to, please let us know directly, that would be fine. And again, we're going to try to use our time as wisely and fruitfully as possible. So that's really our plan at this point. We have had a number of presentations to the group, which have been wonderful and which have led to a number of specific recommendations that have been entered into the spreadsheet, both by workgroup members, as well as Al has captured some of those for us. We're hoping today to go through a number of those. First, we're going to invite Hans to enlighten us about all the work that he did mapping the recommended new data classes and elements to the standards in FHIR and CDA. Then we're going to ask Michelle to talk with us and about the CMS recommendations that she has documented. We're then going to come back and look at the NAME standards that derived from our presentation from the USA project, as well as the gender harmony recommendations that came from that presentation. So we're hoping to get through as much of that today as we possibly can, and then probably next week come back to the recommendations that came out of our discussions last week. So lots to do. Our plan is very much to drive towards solid completed recommendations. So as we go through these items one by one, while we appreciate diverse conversation and perspectives, we really want to drive to conclusions, because the faster we get through each of these, the more of them we'll get to, and the more we'll have an opportunity to impact the final USCDI B3. So, Arian, do you want to add to that?
Sorry, no, I'm good with that. Thank you.
All right. And let's see, Mark sent me a chat. Okay, yeah, so we do have a priority column that we've put in the spreadsheet that really I think the work group leads are using to try to flag those things that we want to be sure to get to. If you guys want to comment on that, feel free to throw it in a comment or send us an email, but ideally you can leave that priority column to us just as a placeholder. All right, Hans, are you here?
I'm here.
Wonderful. Excel team, do you guys have Hans's slide that he shared with us? I know I'm sort of throwing you off here. There we go. There it is. Okay. Hans, please let us know how you have approached this and how we can take advantage of your work.
And perhaps also if you have the Excel spreadsheet handy, because we're going to shift over to it. What we did the last round and that we're trying to do again this time is to look at proposed USCDI data elements and classes. And consider that in USCDI, there would be a statement about the vocabulary that would support that as part of the USCDI standard. But then from an implementation certification adoption by HIT perspective, the question then came is that supported? Is there work to be done that if we propose this, that additional guidance is needed to make that happen? So when you look at that, and this picture is trying to summarize that a little bit, on the USCDI, we have version 1 and 2 that are currently in the green, they are published. They are currently being supported by FHIR US Core release 3.1.1 and in flight soon, we anticipate, release 4.0.0. Version 2, currently from the last round, did not have all the support. And actually what you see here with Alliance is that version 4.1.0 that is in flight, is in ballot, and on the CCDA side on version 3 of the companion guides is in flight to ensure that version 2 is being supported with the appropriate guidance. So the exercise was to do the same for version 3, to look at what is already in FHIR US Core, what's already in CCDA and the companion guide to support it so that there's unambiguous guidance and it is in the standards that are referenced in certification that are to support USCDI progression. So that's the intent, because when you look at it, then you go to the right-hand side of the picture, data may sit in FHIR R4 or it may sit in CDA R2. That does not necessarily mean that it is recognized in US Core. There might be another implementation guide like Gravity, DaVinci, or something else that does it, but FHIR US Core is the one that is being called out that needs to support USCDI. And that is therefore eligible for an update in SFAP in the next round. So that's why we're looking very specifically at the FHIR US Core. Is it there? If not, then it's work. It could be thorny work. It could be very straightforward work, but it's work to ensure that standard is published, updated and published so that everybody can then use it correctly. So that's the exercise. If you switch over to the spreadsheet where all of them are listed, and we're going to look at columns E and F, the question there was that, okay, is it in the FHIR IG? Is it in CCDA? And that really meant, is it in FHIR US Core? Is it in CCDA and the associated 2.1 and the associated companion guides? Do I have that? The legend there is that it's textual and it's the coloring. is that if it's green, like, for example, discharge summary notes, it's already supported in FireUS Core. There is notes guidance around that. And there is guidance there. So that looks like that it's green. As in another example, in discharge summary note, where there's the addition on the must contain admission, there are a couple of things in there that would have to be clarified for locations and reasons, and there's some additional text there. So there's some work to be done, and that's the orange. Didn't try to avoid red as being too strong. So what you'll see is that then you get the general sense of that, is that the that for most of the proposed US CDI data elements and classes, there is work to be done. And that can range from a fairly straightforward to guidance that is already existing in other guides, but now we need to figure out how it's incorporated in FireUS Core. Work that is currently going on, for example, for SDOH data that needed to go into version 2 that was available in Gravity, but not in US Core. So it's work like that, as well as more thorny issues like around coverage status, where what is being proposed, what is in the guides across FHIR, CCDA is not totally in sync, and there's still a fair amount of debate. What's the right, what's the right status that one would have to include, or the coverage type, I should say. So that's what is documented there, only meant to provide background, a backdrop to understand where things generally sit. We have to keep in mind is that US CDI comes out, there is more time available than what there initially was last year. There's more time available to say that, okay, it can be in US CDI, but we have to remember there's still work to be done. Is if we feel it's too big, then it's probably too soon. If we think that it's reasonable, then it is something that's, that can go into US CDI and aim for having that updated in the standards. Don't have an estimate of time with some of those things. They can take longer or shorter. So it's just meant as background to inform us about, are we okay to progress with this or not? I'm going to stop there, Steve, and hand it back to you.
Thank you so much, Hans. And I think it's important as we craft our recommendations back to the HITECH and onto ONC that we remain aware of the fact that if we ask for things to be added or recommend things to be added to V3, that we need to incorporate an understanding of the work that needs to be done by HL7 to support each of those new elements. Arian, you put your hand up?
I did. So Hans, you know, I think in some cases you're talking about additional guidance. So when I look at the discharge summary note, you know, it feels like all of the data elements that are in the definition have a place to go in for example, the FHIR spec. And in other cases, we have data elements or concepts in FHIR that are just not there. Have you done that level of mapping in the difference between just guidance versus structural issues?
I generally looked at it. I don't see too many structural issues, and I can sort of clarify that. It is more the types of elements where the data is available in, let's say, CCDA 2.1 in the base implementation guide. It's optional. There's a lot of optionality in there. The companion guide provides more specifics on the binding to the vocabulary, and that it's actually being identified as being tested. In FHIR, you will see is that there's a good use of must support, indicating that there's clarity that you are expected to work with this field. In the underlying standard, it's just optional, and there's not much data there. So those are the main things there. So if you look at some other ones, it's a little bit challenging to understand. Is that okay? Where exactly I have options on how to do it? So it's guidance about which structural option I need to follow to express it, and that we do so consistently. I've not seen at this point in time yet a real structural issue. Typically, they are being resolved with observations and otherwise. So it's possible. It's just we need to agree on the same way of doing it.
Got it. Thank you. So just sort of in conclusion, a lot of the work that HL7 would have to do is the nitty-gritty, thorny work of putting together the implementation guidance, explaining what vocabulary standards, explaining where to put certain concepts. But you're not seeing at this point major structural issues where there literally is not a resource or where this can go, or the resource fields don't have the definition that's available.
No, the constructs that are available so far seem to indicate that it can be covered. But let's say in fire, does it need an extension? Perhaps, yeah, that might be the case. But that's a structural easy thing to do. I've not seen anything that we would have to go back and say it's just not possible in fire version 4, and there's no way to create an extension for it to support it. So I've not seen any of those types of major structural issues.
Awesome, thank you.
David McCallie.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Hans, for putting that diagram up. It's helpful, but it raises some questions to me. What can you say about what the vendor community is targeting with respect to release 4.0 and 4.1 and R2, R3? Is this something that they're committed to? Is this something years away? Is there an EHRA perspective, timing-wise?
Yeah, if you can go back and show that slide, that's a little bit easier to then reference the different versions. So from a perspective, it's a combination of some might already have support for this, where the guidance is available. Other ones are not, but overall, the perspective is that as long as we can get in a timely fashion the implementation guidance agreed to and published, that at that point in time, there is the opportunity to then progress and implement it. Have to keep in mind the difference between SFAP, which is a voluntary adoption opportunity. So what you likely will see in this diagram, USCDI version 2, you will see is that as soon as R4 1.0 of Fire US Core is published, it's still in the ballot process of being reconciled, and then it has to be published over the next couple of months. You will start to see that some are probably going to begin upgrading to that. Most probably will still looking at version 1 and R4.0 to look at that and see how that can enhance their abilities, given where we are in the certification timeline. So I cannot give you an across the board, everybody is going to implement it with a particular date, time certain, there is the a desire and the participation that you can see that as we progress through version 1, version 2, version 3 of UCDI, that we can get to the clarity, and that creates for everybody a path that they can follow at their appropriate pace and where the focus is. I'm not sure whether I'll answer your question, but.
Well, it's a start, but let me ask from the other side, what happens, what are the obligations or impacts on the broad community when something is in USCDI, be it version 2 or at some point soon version 3, and there's no appropriate companion guide standard implementation to use it? Is there an obligation that creates for people to just make up a way to send it? Or does it say you don't need to use it until Fire supports it? I'm just clear what who's pushing, who's pulling, and what obligations we might be accidentally creating that actually hinder interoperability.
Hey, David, Al's got his hand up, and I suspect he's got a perspective here on the way that ONC policy machinery works.
Please.
Yeah, maybe not so much the policy, but more the process. So it's our intention, because USCDI is invoked by six or seven different certification criteria, some with fire and some with CCDA. It's our intent to ensure that those IGs update sufficiently to be able to accommodate changes to USCDI, such as USCDI version 2. And it is for that reason, that amount of time it takes to update those IGs, it's that reason why we adjusted the SFAP timeline, because in order for somebody to voluntarily update their systems to version 2, they need to also voluntarily update their systems to US Core and the CCDA, the appropriate versions that reflect USCDI V2 changes. So that will continue to be our intent, is to have all of the change, have those two IGs be able to accommodate changes in subsequent versions of USCDI.
And David, just as a reminder, because we had this conversation earlier on in the work group deliberations, and not speaking for ONC or even implying any ONC policy, but we had the conversation about how the way that the policy wants to work is that the SFAP is the mechanism for standards advancement, and that there should be a natural way for the SFAP to flow down into deployed technology that's associated with incentive programs. And right now, there's a little bit of stickiness just in terms of the regulatory machinery, where because of the Administrative Procedures Act, it's hard to put together a natural glide path that works the way that we want it to work and is consistent with the APA. So I know greater minds than ours who are thinking through the APA are trying to make sure that all this machinery works. But in early on in deliberation, I think we were going to, as a work group, pretend as if the machinery works. Our job is to feed the top of the machine for things that want to enter into the SFAP. And then to the point that we're raising, we just need to be thoughtful about the timelines for getting something into the top of the SFAP, getting through the testing and implementation guidance work so that it can enter the bottom of the SFAP and be more broadly adopted in industry. And you know, David, I think a lot of the questions you're raising are about the policy incentives for people to broadly adopt, as well as making sure that we've got the implementation guidance before we have the broad adoption. As I said, I think we ought to pretend as a work group that we've got that policy machinery kind of well oiled, and our job is to think through what goes into the top of the SFAP. Al, did I get that right, or directionally right? You can wave your hand in a suggested manner.
How about if I lower my hand in a suggested manner?
Perfect, thank you.
And maybe to to David's question, UCDI version 1, and therefore the associated implementation guides, 3.1.1 and version 2, I just don't see in the chart, but for CCDA, they are required for certification to be certified for 2015 CURES update certification. As we get into UCDI version 2 rolling into SFAP, version 3 rolling into SFAP and their associated guides, for base certification, you don't need to support that. But if you want to, you then need to certify those version if you want to certify to you the next version of UCDI or to those guides. So then in that sense, it becomes, if you want to be certified, you must then support those guides, but you don't have to be certified yet against SFAP. You can do that at whatever time you like to do that, recognizing that when the next certification edition comes out, whenever that might be, and it's going to raise that bar, or likely the last SFAP and then the latest from that, is that now you need to make that immediate jump. So for for HIT that wishes to be certified and stayed up with it, progression allows you to spread that out over time. And depending on the HIT, you may, and the environment where you operate, you may want to stay up to date with that closely, or you may say, I'm taking my time for it, or you wait until the next certification round. That's the optionality, the volunteer part. But we need to make sure, I think here, is that all the pieces can work, and that if somebody makes the decision to want to be certified against an ASVAB 2023, let's say, coming up, that everything is there and we can unambiguously implement it. That's why it's important to understand, is everything already covered? If so, great. If not, if it's a reasonable effort, that's okay. We now have a little bit more time to catch up with that, with the standards. If not, then we really need to seriously think about the maturity level, where it can go in.
Thank you, Hans. And I'm going to move us along. That was a great review for those of us who've been here in past years. We've covered this a number of times. And again, as we make recommendations, we just have to keep in mind which of them are going to require work on the part of HL7 to get things ready for us. All right, so we want to move on to Michelle. We want to give CMS the mic so that we can talk through your recommendations. Michelle, I think most of yours are recommendations about level 2 data elements that you would like to see included in version 3, which is well within our charge. So if you can walk us through those as expeditiously as possible, we will try to come up with some recommendations one way or the other.
Thank you. I really appreciate the time today. Just to level set, we actually do talk across other parts of the federal government, and I am representing CMS, but there's agreement around some of these things in particular. So the first one, I think it's above where you have us on the worksheet, is it the facility level data, the facility identifier. I think it's above the medications one. And here, identifiers are actually really critical for billing.
Point us to the row, because I was defining your name starting from the top, so I want to be clear.
No.
Okay. It's that one's row 17, facility level data.
Hold on. Okay. And this is really about a couple of things that identify facilities. These data are critical for public health reporting, again, for linking billing and clinical EHRs. They support data aggregation across multiple data sources. And in particular, what we're recommending one is the CCN number, which is the unique CMS identifier for facilities that bill CMS. And two is the PTN number. It's the provider transaction number that is uniquely identifies healthcare and organizations. So there we go. Yes, you're right. Row 17. And I think we have that outlined.
And Hans,
are already well established.
Hans, can we lean on you to sort of jump back and forth to your prior work and tell us, is there an HL7 challenge with regard to this data element that you were aware of?
And this is the facility identifier.
Facility identifier, yes. Just so we don't dizzy ourselves going back and forth.
Right. I'm just jumping.
Okay, that's fine. While you're looking, any questions about this recommendation? Any concerns on the part of the work group?
I have a question. How does it relate to the organization's NPI?
Michelle, did you hear Clem's question?
I thought NPIs are provider identification.
Well, it's an organization provider, like a hospital would have an NPI as well as an individual physician.
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look, Clem, to be honest with you. I know that we use the CCN, the certification number. That's how we track hospitals.
Okay. I mean, it's going to cause, we always ought to clarify why is one or the other, because it'll cause confusion.
So let's see. So this is a request, though, or a suggestion that we suggest the inclusion of facility identifier in version 3 for these reasons. Any concerns?
Yes, Stephen. So I just want to remind the work group that the last time we talked about this, we suggested that the identifier be a combination of authority and identifier, so that we can accommodate multiple types of identifiers for the facility.
Yeah, we've always done that.
Yep.
Question would be whether all HIT would have that data, those particular identifiers.
Yeah, you would not have the CCN if you are not set up, if you're not enrolled for Medicare fee for service. As Clem says, you would have a facility level NPI in some cases. There's a whole host of identifiers that are payer specific. So, we just need to make sure that the way that we set this up in USCDI accommodates the notion that there are multiple identifiers, and then makes it clear, the CMS preference for CMS-based identifiers.
So would we need to include both the facility identifier itself as well as a specification of which data set this was being drawn from?
Yeah, so what we're proposing, or what I'm proposing, is it's a combination of identifier and authority, and it's a multiplicity, so that you can attach multiple identifiers for a given facility.
Can I just comment? I think the NPI, it may be the organization, which the facility is at the physical location. I'm just not sure what that means is. Then it's not the same as the NPI. Does anybody know?
That's not clear to me either. I've tried to do some digging to get more clarity around that, but that's not clear to me either. And I echo a question that David has, is that, is it on the encounter, the individual, where does that sit? And the added question to Clemson and to David would be, is that if we put it in USCDI, that means HIT can support it. Does any HIT support it, or is it more the administrative systems that would have the information as they pull things together, not necessarily the clinical systems that don't have, where this number does not have any further meaning. So therefore they would not be able to support it. So from a standards perspective, if we find out where it sits, the underlying capability is there in principle. If we identify, is the location, is the organization, identifiers allow what Arian is indicating that needs to be done. So the basic building blocks would be there, but are the systems that would have to implement this, should everybody support this, or is this more if you do quality measures you must, or if you do claims you must, but if you don't, then this is not as
important. Yeah, and the other question that's been raised about, is this an organizational identifier or a sub-organizational, literal brick and mortar identifier? Also a critical question to answer. Hans, is there an organizational identifier already in FHIR somewhere?
Effectively, yes. So where the statement at the bottom of H 17 says there's a FHIR resource organization. So it sounds like it's meant to be an organization. Organization as the resource has an identifier that can include the value and the assigning authority and the type and a number of other things. So the building blocks are there. The question is, what is that organization associated with that this is relevant? So that's the question that David has. Is it going to be against an encounter? Is it going to be against the patient? What is it that it is part of in that regard? And then the question is that the HIT that is trying to represent this, is that within their scope, or is it a more administrative, financial? So I think there certainly would need to be work done to clarify where is capped. And I think there's the larger question for the USCDI perspective that is meant to be supported by all HIT that that wants to certify against it. If we take that angle, I know there are other angles, but if you look at it from that angle, then is the, for example, an EHR Is that is that something that is relevant? If it's administrative, yeah. If it's quality measures, perhaps. Yeah, that sounds like it. But does everybody need to support this? That particular kind of the CCN and the PTAN, are those specific identified types necessary to be supported by everybody?
Yeah, so again, I think David's asking the same question in the chat, and the issue is putting something into USCDI does not require anyone to collect it. We've gone over this 100 times. You know, if I add that, then I'm adding burden to people, forcing them to collect it. You are not required to collect a head circumference, you know, if you are seeing a 90-year-old. It's as simple as that. You know, you don't have to collect a blood pressure just because it's in USCDI if it has nothing to do with your workflow. USCDI tells us that if you have this data, this is the data element in which it lives and how it will be exchanged, and that you should be able to both send it and ideally to be able to receive it. But it doesn't mean you have to collect it. Yeah. So,
and Stephen, I think what the group's doing here is trying to make sure that this concept is as generally useful as possible, so that we're not vectoring in with a specific CMS identifier that's not applicable for facilities or organizations that that, for example, don't submit CMS claims or associate with other programmatics and other identifiers. So maybe what I can propose back to the group is either that we amend this recommendation to be an organizational identifier with a combination of assigning authority and identifier consistent with FHIR, and that it should be attached to the encounter, because I think that's what makes the most logical sense. Or we remand it back to Michelle to, you know, address some of the questions that the group has raised.
Now, Ariane, I can certainly live with sort of a more general identifier with a CCN and a PTAN as something underneath that as an example. To be honest with you, I'm having a hard time envisioning a healthcare facility that isn't identified or bills something in CMS.
Pediatric practice.
Medicaid. So anyhow, you know, we're not just talking about Medicare fee for service.
Okay, Ariane, help me craft your recommendation.
So the recommendation is
slide a little to the right, Al, so we can see the recommendation.
So the proposed recommendation is that we amend this to be an organizational identifier. That organizational identifier be composed of an assigning authority and an identifier, that there be a multiplicity of organizational identifiers, that the coding system accommodate CCN and PTAN, and that it be associated with the encounter.
All right,
and that it be in the category of, required if known. Although I don't think we identify in USCDI the data requirements, the optionality requirement modifiers, right?
Okay, that's the recommendation. Is anybody uncomfortable with that?
Not with the overall intent in a way, but the implication is that if this is included in USCDI, every HR team that wants to be certified must demonstrate that they can handle it. And for those two identifier types, that's where the question is that really reasonable for all HIT that wants to be
certified HIT?
Correct, absolutely.
Certified HIT. When and if this is included as a certification requirement. So first it's added to USCDI, then it's added to SFAP, then we have experience with its voluntary use, and then and only then is it added as a certification requirement.
Not true, because it goes into the standards now need to, if this is in USCDI, then the standards need to be able to support that. So that means is that the moment that those standards go into ASVAB, which they will do at an appropriate time, then anybody that wishes to certify against that must be able to demonstrate that. So that, because the scope is all of you, part of USCDI, all of USCDI.
Right. And to the point, this is already included in HL7 FHIR, probably is included in the consolidated CDA specs. And so what you'd be required to do is demonstrate that you can fill that slot out or receive that slot in interoperability.
With those values, and that's the thing.
So I don't think we're saying that the assigning authority needs to accommodate the CCNMP10.
Effectively, yes. And that means you need to be able to demonstrate that if you want to be fully conformant to it.
This is Steve Eichner. Ike.
Go ahead, Ike.
I think we're running into some potential issues looking at the assigning authority and looking at reconciling that identification in terms of utility. And do we need to be concerned about what authority is assigning an authority ID? I'm thinking from a public health perspective, for example, looking at validating that an organization is the organization that it says it is. And if I'm using this ID, I need to know the assigning authority, and trying to index a myriad of assigning authorities could become really complicated.
Thank you. All right, so I've continued to capture this in a draft recommendation. Are we willing to call this final or not?
Steve, I think I like the proposal perfectly well, but looking on the web, it's very confusing. One place it says the PTN is the same as the CCN. One place it says that the CCN has replaced the NPI. We need somebody with knowledge to say what's the what. What are these things?
So just to be clear,
you're giving me a homework assignment. I take it.
Yeah.
All right. Good. Let's do that.
I personally cannot answer that question.
So let me take this recommendation out of the final column, and we'll put it in a draft state, and we'll go on. Because we could get stuck here all day.
Okay, the next, and we had it up before, I don't know what row it is around medications. There we go. And in particular, these hadn't been finalized before. You're right, they're level two, but they do get to the management of medications, which I think we all know is critical for patient care and coordination between the providers, quality, public health. Patients need to know what medications they're actually taking. So here the recommendation is around including the medications administered code, medications that are dispensed, discharge medications, and dosages.
Now, wait, are you on row 12, which is discharge medications?
12 is discharge medications. 13 is dosage.
Okay, let's go one at a time. So you
scroll up too, because the first one we talked about is medication administration code.
Yeah. So, Stephen, before we dive in, it might be worthwhile just noting the state of play for USCDI and FHIR and consolidated CDA.
Okay.
So right now, USCDI V2 and V1 say medications encoded by RxNOR, and that's it. I think the way this works out in the real world is that medications encoded by RxNorm is a shorthand for this really complex field for structural representation of medications. And Hans, you can correct me, but with respect to demonstration of interoperability, you're already required to demonstrate the variety of medications and medication concept representations that are expressed or implied in the consolidated CDA and FHIR, US Core FHIR. And to some extent, this is one where we either need to fully represent medications in US CDI at the level of complexity that they're represented in those underlying standards, or keep it at the sort of hand-wavy medications concept, shorthand for, you know, all the ridiculous complexity. If we include specifics here, but not the other kinds of representations that are available under medications in the underlying interoperability specs and their associated implied models, then we're missing a whole lot of stuff. We're sort of assuming then that all that other complexity is not included in US CDI. So this is one where we either need to go whole hog or keep it at the hand wavy level. Hans, I wonder whether you could comment on how in practice the one word medications in US CDI reflects its way through consolidated CDA and FHIR.
It really primarily focuses on the presence of, and I'll put it between quotes, of an order or a request, a prescription that is out there. That's really the primary focus. So you can get from a medication list that enables you to understand what is the patient on. But it's not going to the level of each administration recorded is now included in that set in US Core and in CCDA. That does not mean that systems do not capture when they EHRs, that they do not capture administrations individually. It's just not at this point in time the scope of what certification is looking at to capture that level or demonstrate that level. But
Ariane, I think, and it's Michelle, I think that's actually part of the issue. We don't really know without probably a great deal of work what somebody, for example, is discharged on and what their medication list actually is. And that's why we're bringing this forward. But I think you're right. Within RX norm, there is probably a lot of information, and this isn't all of it. And I guess if I had to vote for one thing, it might have to be whole hog, as you say, because what we have now by waving our hand at it, I don't think is giving patients the information that they need or facilities actually the information.
Well, could I clarify a little bit? I don't think there's any ambiguity in naming the medications with RX norm. Well, the issue is there's another layer or there's another dimension about, which is really lists of medications. So they should all be coded. If you have the RX norm code, you know what they got. The question is the dispense and this and that. And it's different for outpatient than inpatient. Inpatients, you actually dispense them one at a time, you know, and you record it. Outpatients, they take the medicine home and who knows what they're taking. So I don't think it's a matter of throwing away the hand wave one. That's really describing what the medication is we're talking about. There's another layer that says whether it's dispensed, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think some of those are in CCDA, aren't they? As different categories.
They're in the concepts are representable in consolidated CDA and in FHIR. You know, again, just to remind everybody, so we talked about discharge medications. We talked about medications dispense bedside. You know, there's a significant difference between medications ordered and medications taken. Right. So there's a fractal complexity associated with medications, and it sounds like from Michelle's perspective, she'd prefer for us to in US CDI specify, you know, whole hog. The clinical representations or the ontology for medications that's sufficient to make clinical quality determinations in ways that allow us to disambiguate, for example, medications dispensed inpatient versus medications dispensed on discharge versus medications confirmed and taking in a current medications list.
And And at this point in time, the focus is primarily on that medication list. When you look at the implementation guides, the focus of that, it would be substantial amount of effort to align everybody to get the other parts of the medication area in play. Discharge summaries do include medication lists. So I think the question is then, as we go to the more refined detail, what exactly are we trying to address at that point in time that would have to be in play? And I think that's not totally clear from this description, what exactly is intended, so that there's clarity on how to then make it supportable. Is it just a list of medication administrations that you can show?
Well, Michelle, I think some of what you want is in CCDA. I don't know whether you're able to look at that or that's the place you're looking.
Not sure I can answer that at the moment.
Clem, I think the issue is not whether it's representable in FHIR or CCDA, but whether it is literally part of USTDI. That is to Stephen's repeated point. Is it part of the set from which interoperability specifications can assume they can pull from, so that we can create implementation guides specific to that imply the existence of discharge meds as a structured thing. And to Hans's point, we can get to a discharge med list with coded concepts if we include the discharge summary and its representation both in consolidated CDA and FHIR.
So again, in the interest of time, Michelle has been talking about a number of medication-related data elements. Some of them up higher, the discharge medications and dosage. Some of them here down lower, the medications dispensed and the medication administered code. The proposal is from CMS to add these to USCDI so that they become part of the defined core data set that would be pointed to by the 6 to 7 certification criteria that Al mentioned earlier in the future. And we would assure that they were included in CCDA and FHIR US Core so as to support that. So is that a recommendation that this work group would like to carry forward for one or all of those four data elements, or do we have concerns about these and we want to leave them at level 2 to relook at another day?
I think the main problem is that if it's expecting that all of that's going to be in one code, it's not going to be feasible. But I'm not clear that they're not aware of the other places to look for it. Now, maybe it's specifically inpatient medication administration, which is the gap.
Yeah, I'd say that it's the sense of the work group, Stephen, or at least the sense of a vocal subset of the work group that says we either need to go all, we either need to fully specify what we expect out of USCDI in the area of medications, and that's going to take some work to do. And that we don't have the level of specificity right now to be able to do that specification.
All right, is that where we're going to leave this?
The problem that I have with this, though, is that the current concept of medications that we have, it doesn't differentiate what's active, ordered, actually administered, and not necessarily even dose and route. And I don't know how you can make informed clinical decisions, let alone, having quality measures or without that kind of granularity.
Yeah, dose and route, again, are fully expressible in the underlying specification. So fully expressible in NCPDP script standard, fully expressible in FHIR and consolidated CDA. I actually don't think in actual practice that we're missing dose and route information relative to medication lists. I think the bigger issue is whether we have the life cycle of medications expressed enough in USCDI sufficient to be able to say from an interoperability and certification future certification perspective that you can determine what is the discharge med list. You can determine what is the medications currently taken list versus the medications ordered list.
And Michelle, RxNorm distinguishes route and route as well as them. So it's all in the RxNorm code, that particular set of things.
Clem, it allows for the different routes, the most appropriate route for given medication, but it doesn't, but that's, and it can be that particular medication. We don't know about it if it says intramuscular injection. We don't know that actually intramuscular injection was performed. That would be handled by some other attribute of medication besides RxNorm. I think that's what Michelle is asking for, is having these additional attributes of a medication be part of USPI, so that anybody accessing medication data using a future version of USCDI could also get the information about whether or not a medication was first. Yes, it was prescribed, and it was prescribed using e-prescription, ERX, as a certification criteria, but that information, that level of detail isn't necessarily available to a patient accessing the record or a provider somewhere else accessing a record remotely. I think that's what Michelle is asking for. Michelle, if you could verify that.
You're better at asking. Yes, I think you're better at representing it than I am. So thank you, Al.
Sure. I think that the recommendation is add these attributes to the medication data class, so that level of detail is available to anybody accessing the record through USCDI exchange.
Yeah, and Al, I think my perspective is, if we do that, we have to really do it. Make sure that the medication class in USCDI fully represents the needed representational complexity of medications. And so if we put in some but not all, we're implying that the ones that we don't include, aren't required. And so what we really want to do is sort of import the implied medication model from, for example, FHIR into USCDI. And then we'd also want to make sure that we've got the representational model so that we can capture discharge medications, medications administered, medications ordered, and the home med list fully in USCDI. And I think that's going to take some work.
And this is, don't forget trial status. That's another missing element that we don't do very well right now.
Sorry, what was that, Ike?
Whether the medication is being used as part of a clinical trial.
Oh, yeah, that's clearly a different data element. Yeah.
It's a different
data. Again, but to be clear, Michelle is bringing forward, CMS is bringing forward data elements that have been evaluated in detail by ONC and found to be level 2. I mean, I appreciate, Ariane, that we may have not done that work, but ONC has done that work. And each of these now 4 data elements related to medications, have been determined to be level 2 and therefore ready for inclusion from a technical maturity, use in the real world perspective. So when you say a lot of work needs to be done, what work needs to be done beyond adding these 4 data elements to USCDI and letting it go through the process?
Al, can you speak to whether we've fully mapped the implied medication data model in FHIR into USCDI based on approving this work?
I'm not sure that's kind of not how it works. We don't take a FHIR model and apply it to USCDI data elements. If need be, if they already fit together, that's great. If they need additional work, like some other USCDI data elements are going to need or currently are going to make them work in US Core, then that work needs to be done. So we don't, to adopt the entire model, and that's not, I don't think, what Michelle is suggesting, to say that every conceivable data element or attribute of medication should be included in USCDI medication data class. I don't think that's what she's saying. And I don't think that we don't necessarily need to, and by picking 4 out of probably 20 conceivable attributes of medication to go into USCI in some future version, that it is saying that these are the most important for a certain set of
people. Yeah.
The complexity is these are not attributes of a medication as an abstraction from patient care. They're all tied to other aspects of care. So they're lists typically.
Yeah.
And the medication codes within the lists are the same, regardless of what list.
Yeah. And I'm sort of triggered by the dosage. When we talk about dosage, are we talking about root, strength, formulation, signum, additional instructions? Are we fully representing the data that typically goes along with an NCPDP script standard, or is transmitted from a pharmacy bedside for med administration bedside? Or are we we're talking about something else? It's dosage that sort of implies to me that maybe we're leaving out, because we haven't included there's a whole bunch of other things that are included in that medication implied model besides dosage that are required to fully cash out a medication into what's the chemical entity that the patient either was exposed to or was ordered for the patient.
Arian, I'm wondering whether in this context, I'm looking also at column I, cell 22, where it states is that standards do not support the determination of current medication list or medications administered. And actually, it does support medication lists, and actually it does support medication administrations as well, just not in the implementation guides on the latter one that needs to be certified. But to clarify, discharge summary is a good example. It includes medication lists that is addressed and that's available. If you look at FHIR US Core, medication list is a very explicit, I could drop in the URL to the page where it clarifies how you're supposed to do it. And that's parts that is supported. So I'm wondering but administrations are not currently part of FHIR US Core CCDA more explicitly on how to further do that in context of certification. So I'm wondering whether for USCDI, if we put in the medication list, whether the current medication list, the ability to do that, it's effectively already in play. But for USCDI, that's probably a good thing to recognize. If we get to administration, other parts of it, I think that's where the more work needs to be done to further address how to best express it and what's missing. But on medication list itself, I think there is already many pieces and parts that are in play to say that's what is being supported today.
Got it. So your counter proposal, Hans, would be to simplify this recommendation to medications and medication list, and specify that the medication list be applied at admit, discharge, and be sufficient to represent ordered and medications taken.
Yeah, that effectively would reflect what is happening in certification. Look at that, where we have the need to be able to support from CCDAs medication reconciliation. That is because there is in the CCDA medications that are part of a list that are being communicated that you're trying to and need to demonstrate that you can reconcile those into your receiving system. So medication list, I'm not sure why that's considered not existing, because it exists. Administrations, you will also see that there are a number of systems that are already exposing those using FHIR APIs, but not necessarily the US Core, because administrations are not let me just double check, but I don't
think. Yeah. And so, Michelle, I don't know if you're tracking this compromise position, but I think what we're looking at is, let's reflect the real world to say that what we're talking about with medications is medications and medication lists, and that the medication lists be capable of distinguishing between discharge meds, medications currently taken, medications ordered, and that would really accommodate home meds on admit as well. And that what we're missing is meds administered in the context of an inpatient encounter. But it would account for, you know, medications currently taken would account for example, transitions of care from a SNF or step down facility to another facility. You just wouldn't, and I think it's appropriate that USCDI is not in the nitty gritty of communication from a pharmacy system to, you know, to barcode scanning on floor for meds administered. Does that make sense to you?
Arian, thank you. It does make sense. And by the way, thank you to all of you for interpreting some of these things. I feel like I'm the instigator of an issue and you guys are helping to resolve it. So thank you. Let me ask a clarifying question though. We've talked a lot about hospital and hospital discharge lists. What happens in the ambulatory side? Do we have does this provide us with an appropriate medication list there?
Yeah, so that's where I was trying to make a distinction between meds ordered and meds currently taken. Hans, maybe you can correct me in terms of what the implementation guides currently call that. But you know, there's a critical distinction, as you know, between what's been ordered for a patient versus what's confirmed as the patient's med list associated with what the patient's currently taken. In some cases, the dose that the patient's currently taking is not the dose that's been ordered, or the patient may have voluntarily discontinued the medication. So that's a critical distinction to make in terms of understanding what's happening. And Hans, I believe that's already representable
I would say the vast majority, there might be a couple of nuances there, but the vast majority is there. It focuses on medication requests and the information that you can keep within a medication request, i.e. a prescription or a order that is in some state of either being active or out there.
Yeah, but we also need the med list, the literal med list, which is implied as the list of medications the current patient's currently taking. But yeah, why don't you and I go offline and put together a proposal back for the work group?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
I think that's fine. I guess I had a question for Al, which is, since there are specific data elements that have been, you know, flagged as being level two, and these are the ones that Michelle requested bringing forward, are we in a position to sort of rejigger those elements into this current medication list and make that as a proposal, or does it need to go through some other process to make it up to level two before we can do that?
So I would need to talk to some folks in certification, but the concept of a current medication list goes way beyond a list of a collection of vocabulary terms or a collection of data elements, because it has to be formatted together. There's the concept of current, which has all the date time requirements, and then medication, and then the list, which is a compilation of it. The concept of current medication list is more of a format or a function, which is outside the scope of USCDI. What you would need to, what the additional data elements that would be required to compile a current medication list is inside in scope for USCDI. And so we would just need to determine what data elements or what attributes of medication are required for something like a medication list, and not how do we develop a new certification requirement for current medication list, a lot like we used to have the problem list as a certification requirement. Now we just have a problem as a certification requirement. I would say that creating this concept of medication list is outside the scope of USCDI.
If it's outside of USCDI, then I'm confused by how to handle the disposition of the requests, which really are to make sure that we've got a discharge med list or a meds administered list.
If it's Michelle that's proposing that for CMS's purposes, the data elements required are the data elements that go into a medication list, just determining which of the, I don't know, I think we have between 20 and 25 current data elements under the medication data class that are not part of the USCDI version. And so which of those are the most required for at least this particular use case, whether it's for all of the reasons that CMS wants these additional data elements, or for the use case of creating and exchanging a current medication list.
Al, if I hear you right in the way you are suggesting to frame it, let me see if I understand that right. Is that then, since the medication list is made up of medication requests, not medication administrations, that you would then translate this suggestion more into focus on include medication requests as part of the data class, not medication list. Am I hearing you correctly then?
Well, so yeah, the current medication list wouldn't, because a current medication list is future medication taking, right? So that's the reason that you want the list, is to see what the patient is taking or has taken up until now. And so a current medication list wouldn't necessarily include medication administered because it hasn't happened yet. Does that make sense?
Well, you know, this administered problem is really thorny because it really only applies inpatient. And then you really have a structure. We're dealing with objects, not dead elements. We're not dealing with fields, we're dealing with objects. So if it's administered in a hospital, they need a date, time, who administered it, what room was, you know, all kinds of other stuff. We can't mix elements or fields with data structures and get anywhere.
Yep.
So I think that the concept, whether it's a data element or an object, or the concept of administered may not, medication administered may not be part of the requirement to create a medication list. Unless it is, you know, perhaps for billing or reporting or quality measurement purposes, to make sure that something's been administered for those, you know, for those reasons. But that's, I think that's different. I think it's different than the current medication list concept, or yes, maybe.
Yeah.
But the question is, what are the most important data elements? For the we'll call it the CMS use case, which is obviously a very large use case. But is that all, or are there other things that might be required for this new concept called current medication list? Not new concept, but new proposal.
So to be honest with you, I thought this was going to be sort of a more straightforward conversation, that we had elements that were in level two that we were just looking to codify into USCDI. What I'm hearing is that maybe this is a separate work group almost that has to provide more detail to this to make a recommendation. Am I correct in that or no?
Well, Michelle, I thought we had a proposal that was workable, and Al said we don't. So,
well, I'm not saying that the proposal is not workable. I'm just not sure that it's being framed. The list of data elements that Michelle is proposing to add may not be all of the same data elements as required for this other concept called the current medication list. Unless what Michelle is saying is that her proposal is to provide additional data elements that are part of a current medication list.
So my worry is that this stuff is already there, at least 80% of it, but they're not defined as codes. It's just a list of fields with codes. I don't think it can be, with causing huge upheaval and record keeping.
It doesn't necessarily have to have a code to be a data element.
No, I don't, but I think that's the mindset of a lot of administrative systems. And I just worry that we have sort of a different worldview. You know, but there is, you know, discharge medications is explicitly included in the discharge records, that it's part of both CCDA and FHIR.
Yep.
So now the administrative one, you might want a list of everything you got administered. That's valid. I don't know if that exists, but we could make it exist. that administered in a hospital or in a nursing home, somewhere where there's a discrete control over the administrations, which doesn't happen in the outpatient.
Okay, so I've been trying to reflect our discussion in this field here. Again, we leave ourselves at a proposed recommendation that sounds like requires more work. Michelle, I would suggest that you take this back to your friends at CMS and see if this is something that they would like to pursue and or contribute to. But it doesn't sound like we're ready to move any of these medication-related recommendations forward as proposed.
That is certainly what it sounds like, Stephen.
All right, and I appreciate everyone's
discussion. We, however, are happy to work with anybody who has enough granular detail to move this forward.
I would volunteer, although I don't know if I could find the time.
We have just a few minutes before we cut to public comment. And Michelle, the other one that you were specifically recommending, including, was surgical notes, operative notes. Those were not called out in version two, or in version one, I should say. Our work group, as Clem pointed out in the chat earlier, last year, our task force did recommend that we simply include all notes that have a LOINC code associated with them. And I don't believe, Al, that you brought that recommendation forward as part of draft V3. We could look at sort of adding specific notes incrementally, and operative notes clearly is one with a high value, and or we could look at recommending, as we did last year, the inclusion of all LOINC coded note types. Al, I'm curious how you see this would move forward most meaningfully.
So the recommendation to add a clinical note type to USCDI is a perfectly valid recommendation, and it could, but as so is adding all LOINC, either doc type or NAIR type LOINC codes to US. Yeah, they're both valid recommendations.
This is row 29, by the way, if you can scroll down to it.
They're both valid recommendations. And we did hear that recommendation from not just the high tech last year, we did not add any additional clinical notes to USCDI to draft V3 or to version two. That recommendation came in before during the V2 cycle, and ONC did not add.
Yes, I'm not actually part of sperm donation thing. I'm your secret clone. We have been orphaned.
Someone
needs to go on mute. Yeah, someone who's listening to the news.
Yeah, and Stephen, I think I would double down on the recommendation. If we're going to do this, we should do it, and we should add LOINC parameterized notes as the thing that's in USCDI, so that we don't have to keep revisiting the question note type by note type.
Well, I guess my question back to Al is, since we recommended that last time and it was not included, if we recommend it this time, is it likely to not be included, or would we be better off simply adding surgical notes?
We look at, I can't say one way or another, but I can say that, we have a limit to the number of data elements that we can require. Just a practical limit to the number of data elements that we can require of anybody in any version of USCDI. And so our decisions are based on that cumulative or the aggregate lift is one way to put it for not only developers, but implementers, providers. So we continue with those priorities about not only breadth of applicability of each individual data element, but also the total aggregate lift as a prioritization criteria. So, the more data elements would obviously be a higher lift for everybody involved.
But again, this is not a new data element. This is simply a new I mean, per se, right? The data element is already there as clinical notes, right?
Well, clinical notes is a class.
Is a class. Oh, okay, so this would be one additional element. So can we agree, before we cut to public comment, that once again this year we would like to recommend to the HITAC and ONC that all LOINC-coded note types be added to USCDI, but failing that, at the very least, add the surgical operation note, LOINC 11504-8, to USCDI.
Sorry, do we already have discharge note that's called out specifically?
Discharge summary note is a clinical note required in USCDI V1, V2, and draft V3.
Got it, thanks. That sounds like a reasonable request to me, Stephen.
Okay.
Formulation of the request.
You're talking about two separate recommendations. One is all LOINC clinical note types or clinical note codes, and then a separate recommendation is surgical note.
Yeah, so I think the recommendation that Stephen's framing is the recommendation that USCDI include all notes expressed through LOINC codes, and that if ONC deems that not an appropriate USCDI recommendation, then the fallback recommendation is to specifically add the surgical note.
Yeah, my suggestion is to leave them as two separate recommendations and not will be one, a contingent sub-recommendation.
And ONC would choose, Al?
Well, we would consider a recommendation to add all LOINC types, LOINC codes, or we would consider the other recommendation of adding surgical or operative note.
So Al, there's a specific subset called it's called the note ontology or something like that. I can get you the right name.
Right.
The category.
Right.
Yeah. And the thing is, there are some institutions just use the ones they want. I think the VA and Mayo is the ones I know about use them widely. But having that list doesn't mean you have to use them. It just means you have the option to use them.
It would mean something different if it were part of USCDI. It would mean that the system has to be able to support any of the LOINC document ontology codes if it were part of USCDI.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So they would be on a developer would be on the hook for being able to represent any of the LOINC codes. So all of them, and that's if hundreds for sure, thousands possibly. I think it's in the many hundreds.
It's at least many hundreds. Yeah.
All right. So we have two recommendations. One is the same one from last year to include them all, which seems to have not gotten the traction it needed in the past. And the other is specifically to include the surgical operation note in the current list.
And Stephen, I think one of the reasons why there might be hesitation on everything goes back to what's the expectation from a certification perspective. Would that then translate into that an HIT that wants to be certified needs to be able to generate any clinical note of any of those codes? Or does it just mean it should not throw up an error when it receives one for display purposes? So that's where the USCDI and the standards underlying it get very murky continuously on these kind of questions.
And you're not going to let us forget that, Hans.
Yeah, it's receive versus generate. So, you know, does a pediatric EHR need to send a discharge note? That doesn't seem like it makes a lot of sense, but certainly should be able to receive a discharge note.
Right. So I think it's that it in a way goes back, and I put in a note later down the list, but and I'm not sure whether we'll get to it at this round, but should, and I will pose as a question, no answer expected, is that should USCDI really become more of a library where it then makes sense to include these kind of things, but really find a better way on the implementation guides to not have one monolithic approach where everything needs to be supported in Fire US Core, but that we can stratify better. What is the stratification strategies to avoid that all HIT must do all capabilities rather than, yeah, you need to receive it, but you don't need to generate it, or you don't need to worry about this administrative.
All right, that was a great conversation. We are going to public comment. Mike, do you want to do the honors?
Yes, thank you, Stephen. We're going to open up with a call for public comment. So if you are on Zoom and would like to make a comment, please use the hand raise function, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you are just dialing in only, press star 9 to raise your hand, and once called upon, press star 6 to mute and unmute your line. So let's pause for a moment to see if we have any public comments. I am not seeing any public comment, any hands raised, Stephen, so I'll turn it back to you and Arian.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So, you know, this is a lot of work. We don't have a lot of time. We are only going to get as far as we get. I personally would actually love to have more time, either stretching out the time that we dedicate to this work by a week or two, or potentially even adding additional meetings if that were a possibility, because I think we're doing good and important work. So I'll ask Al and Mike to maybe comment on whether that could be done. But out of today's discussion, we have a draft recommendation on row 17 related to facility identifiers, which I think we have a commitment for someone, I forget who it was, to go back and work on and bring back perhaps to, as a way that we can actually move that one forward. I think on the medication side, I captured our discussion in row 22. I think it sounds like it's less likely that we're gonna get that done for this year's cycle. To be able to move towards the presentation of a current medication list, though I share the desire for that. Sorry, Arian, go ahead.
So on the facility, I think we have a proposal to look at that as organizational code. And I think the specific request was for Michelle to flesh out whether there is a preferred must support from CMS. relative to the variety of codes that CMS currently uses. And then I think we need to better specify, to Hans's point, whether the intent is must send this from an interoperability perspective or must be able to receive any if they're variably coded.
Okay, so that's an action item for Michelle and the CMS team to come back.
Taken, and we will bring that back.
Perfect. All right. Thank you, Arian, for that clarification. Okay. And then I was just trying to summarize again. Is anyone planning on going and working on the current medication list presently, or shall we back burner that and maybe come back to that during the second phase of our work group effort?
I would be happy to touch base with Michelle and run through some of the things there, if that works.
Yeah. That would be great. We'd be happy to have a conversation.
Wonderful.
It sounds like, though, this may become back burner because it's so complicated.
But maybe we can figure out a path or something there that we could
see. Yeah, suggest. Thanks, Hans.
And we did finalize a recommendation regarding the procedure notes to reassert our interest in the full LOINC document ontology. But at the very least, as a separate recommendation, to recommend the addition of the surgical operation note. So that's where we got today. Anyone want to add any comments before we close? All right. I think we're going to come back
Stephen,
next
I'll
time.
Just, oh, I'll, go ahead, I'll Mark. Vote for more meetings. I'll vote for more meetings.
Yeah.
This
so maybe
important.
Al, you want to give us your off the top response to that idea?
My initial response is to talk about it on the co-chair debrief.
Yeah, why don't we talk about it in just a bit?
Okay. But at this point, we have weekly meetings scheduled. I think we said that we were going to entertain this phase one work through the March 29 meeting. Is that right, Al? Do I have that right?
Yeah, and then but that, so that includes a deadline of, I think, March 25th for member input, and then yeah, doing final education on the 29th.
And when you say member input, you say, you mean to say new comments or recommendations in the spreadsheet. I'm just thinking, how much work can we get done on what's already been submitted between in the next three meetings?
We could conceivably push that closer to the HITECH if the goal is to get the HITECH recommendations finalized by the HITECH meeting.
Okay. So we are going to start back in next week with hopefully a follow-up on these CMS recommendations. And then I think Arian and Mark are going to try to help us finalize the USA project recommendations. And then we will hopefully be able to move on to recommendations related to health status. So we will see you all next week.
Thank you.
Thank you.